Session number 10403, rule 7.
Mr. Harold Sell, Reel 7. What was the during the active service, just a point I wanted to cover, what was the general attitude at Brigade Headquarters towards drinking or alcohol drinking?
Well, Jackie Churchill was in himself very abstemious, and the mess was an abstemious mess. He called all of us together, and he used to talk to me quite seriously, in which he made it clear that it was our duty to everybody in the brigade always to remain clear-headed at all times, and that at no time should we impair ourselves by alcohol. And in fact, upon that, most of us remained completely abstemious.
So there was no resentment about that? You understood the
reason? We understood the reason for it all.
During the retreat, it was quite a... Well, the forced march, there was quite a confusing situation. What sort of intelligence reports were you getting in, and how fragmented were they? Could you get a clear picture of what was happening?
Not really. Intelligence reports which were coming in as we were on the move all the time must, of course, entirely came by Don R. The refugee problem was so severe that the continuity of the columns were completely disrupted. And in fact, sections were immobilized for long periods. And the great difficulty I experienced was maintaining a complete continuity of command between the vehicles over probably about 30 miles. Troops who were marching got out of step with their own transport, and they were very fatigued. And altogether, the period of the march, which was a combination of foot march and also by motorized transport, was a very fatiguing one. It wasn't so much difficult as being very fatiguing and interrupted by the stress of the surrounding refugees, who were overwhelming us in many cases, pleading for water and asking for lifts or for help with their family belongings or to carry their children. I think all this had a depressing effect on the troops.
What was the weather like during this?
They're very, very hot indeed. Very hot to dry. The water problem was acute.
How did you try and cope with the dislocation of your march plans?
Well, we set up checkpoints. And I remember arranging with the MTOs of each battalion that they reported back when they had cleared, when the front of their particular column and the rear of their particular column had cleared certain checkpoints which we set up along the route.
So where did you stop the first day? What area did you come back to?
I don't think we stopped in any particular place. We just kept on going through the night and through the day. Two or three hours sleep was snatched by units and subunits as and when they could.
What impact was the fatigue having on people, both within the headquarters and the ordinary troops?
Morale-wise, they were very good, but the effect of fatigue is very marked. Some people fell asleep marching. Others fell down on the ground and could hardly be roused. Ability to think, of course, was greatly disturbed after two or three days without sleep.
Now, you pulled back to the 19th of May. By the 19th, you were in the area of the La Bassée Canal. Do you remember anything happening there?
Yes, La Bassée Canal, we crossed the... We crossed the canal on the way to Vimy, and there was air raids, there were recce aircraft, and we had a couple of dive bomber Stuka attacks.
Do you remember the original attention was perhaps to hold positions along the canal? Do you remember that phase of things?
Yes, I have a copy of an order which we received from division in which they had stated that there was a danger of penetration in the right flank of the BEF, and that we were to go to Vimy Ridge, stabilise the position, dig in along the ridge, to prevent this further penetration. That was the intention as we were moving south.
Could you tell me now the sequence of events as you remember them during the next couple of days?
Well, the advance parties got onto Vimy Ridge, and I remember we at brigade headquarters, I'd allocate them map positions of where they were to go in the area of Vimy Ridge, going to the right, nearly to Givenchy, that area. And every battalion had, under brigade direction, had sent their advance parties into their particular areas where they had prepared sub-areas, and as the units came along, they were directed from the brigade dispersal points into these sub-areas. That was late evening and during the night. Of course, some of the units who were delayed by the refugee problem didn't arrive until during the night. And immediately they took up their positions and commenced to dig in.
That was over the night.
That was during the night. 23rd. Yes, that was during the night. Brigade headquarters went to Petit Vimy, which was at the rear of the ridge.
So what happened next?
Well, during the night, I had been on duty for some time, and the brigade commander had gone back to division, and the divisional commander had come back with him so far, and he had ordered that all the commanding officers should meet him at Vimy. That was at brigade headquarters. It so happened that some of the commanding officers did not reach brigade headquarters because of their late arrival in their areas. The effect of this was that there was no coordinated conference in order that the intention of the divisional commanders and the brigade commanders about an intended attack on Arras could be given out. Some commanding officers were briefed afterwards, and in fact warning orders for the troops being ready to move into the attack had to be issued by brigade headquarters before the orders for the attack was given. The attack was to take place the following day during the afternoon. It was then dawn had broken. Troops were still in their digging in positions. They were very fatigued. Food was being rushed up to them as fast as possible. The brigade commander and the brigade major and the IO quickly moved to an advanced headquarters further down the road towards Arras. The main headquarters stayed where they were. The orders for attack were given, and somewhere about 9:30 or thereabouts in the early morning, the whole of the brigade moved towards the attack onto Arras.
What were the dispositions of the battalions?
Well, the dispositions of the battalions were that on the left was the 8th, was the 6th DLI, on the right was the 8th DLI, and the 9th DLI were coming on in reserve behind the 8th DLI. The attack was intended to bridge the gap which had broken up between the British right flank and the French left flank. And the idea was that if we could close this gap and cut off the Germans' spearhead, it would blunt their attack, and probably from then onwards the position could be stabilised. However, the Germans' recce craft had spotted our movements, and during the midday, or shortly after the midday, aerial attack commenced, and we were also shelled by long-range guns. The men had a long march. It divided itself into almost three parts. There was a long march to contact. There was a deployment. There was to be an assault in the first phase, and then there was to be a regrouping, and then there was a second phase. And the phases were all indicated on the map, and the battle boards were completely marked up. There was no delay there. And the attack commenced.
And what arrangements had been made for... You were doing it in cooperation with the tanks. What arrangements had been made for cooperation between the infantry and the tanks?
Well, at the brigade headquarters, when the brigade commander, and in fact the G1 from division had come down, they came with the tank commander. And the plans for the attack, the detailed plans for the attack, were laid out and were very carefully and skillfully done and issued very promptly and well. The tanks moved forward, and I remember well seeing them moving in from the flank, which gave everybody terrific confidence. The attack was spearheaded by a company of the Northumberland Fusiliers in reconnaissance cars, because they were the divisional reconnaissance unit. And their idea was that they would go along to the front and just see how far and where the Germans were and come back with the information.
How accurate was the intelligence of where? Did you accurately know where the Germans were?
No, we knew that they were in the area of Arras. And we knew that they were panzer units. And we knew they were lorried infantry.
Was this from air reconnaissance?
I think it had come through GHQ, and it had come, obviously, from French liaison.
What then did you see of the attack as it progressed?
Well, the normal drill was that I was very busily occupied in getting all the supply points and everything else opened and carrying out the normal drill to see that the troops were supplied and the casualties were properly sorted out, and get up to the units as close as ever I could in order that their transport and their A echelons and their supplies and everything were correct. And also, as the roads were a problem, I had to maintain a complete road clearance operation from possible refugees to prevent it interfering with the operation.
How did you go about clearing the refugees off? How was that done?
We had a certain number of military police, and they moved off the roads quite easily if we indicated that they must go.
So they were cooperative?
They were cooperative. They were very frightened. They were hot and wanting water. It was a pretty miserable sight.
Did you manage to get all the troops forward to their start lines in time? Was there any problem with that? And organising all these points?
Well, we got it so far, and we got them up to what was made to be their start line for the attack. We got them into the start line to the attack. But before one of the units, it was the 6th DLI, got to their start line, they found the area was already occupied by the Germans. So there was a readjustment there, and an attack was put in, which was very successful. Prisoners were captured. The troops then almost leapfrogged by fire and movement onto the line of their first objective. The 8th July had progressed so far and they got beyond their start line. And then they came under attack from the screening force of the panzer groups. That was Rommel's Panzergruppen. And they were halted. And in order to stabilize the position, the 6th July, the companies, which were commanded by Major Jeffries, were halted. And they dug in where they were. But before very long, there was a counterattack put in by the Germans. It was a tank attack. And that tank attack completely overran Peter Jeffries' parties, which consisted of two companies, completely overran them. That was during the following day and following night. And there was decision by the divisional commander, after we had drawn the German attack and held them for so long, that we should withdraw. Unfortunately, Peter Jeffries' companies, who had been completely overrun, contact was left, was lost, and the commanding officer withdrew the rest of the battalion. And in so doing, he lost his adjutant, he lost the brigade contact officer. And I went forward from Ecury, which was then the forward brigade headquarters, to find out what really had happened. I found some stragglers and units coming back, and they were directed back to brigade headquarters collecting posts. Major Jeffries had, in the meantime, on his own initiative, regrouped during the night and got his extricated his men from a horrible situation of street fighting and tank fighting, and had managed to get them and in due course rejoined brigade with his force almost intact, less his casualties. At that stage, we had been fighting then for 2 days, and the assault by Rommel round our flank had ceased, as far as we could see, and we came back up onto Vimy Ridge. And during that time, of course, we had all the prisoners to handle. There was about 300 of them.
What was the standard procedure for that, as laid down?
Well, the standard procedure was, of course, that if when prisoners are taken, they're immediately disarmed, and they are escorted back to the nearest collecting point, which are always fixed prisoner collecting points. And there they are brought back by unit arrangements to get to brigade headquarters, which is really the first place that you can organize something like that. And there you have the military police. And at that point, the intelligence officer will find out what units there were and make some preliminary examination to find out what units we were against, if he can. And then from then onwards, they are taken by the Corps of Military Police to the intelligence sections from the division, and then they are properly debriefed and properly handled in accordance with the rules.
And is that how these prisoners were treated?
They were treated exactly the same way. They weren't with us very long. They were correctly treated. Some were given some water and food. The water bottles were filled and given and handed over to the Corps of Military Police, and they went back to division.
So you would refute any scandals or suggestions to the that they were treated in any other way?
Oh, yes. I mean, I'd be the last person who saw them as a body being loaded onto the lorries.
What about the situation with regard to the commander of the 6th Battalion, Colonel Miller? Could you explain what happened to him as far as you saw it?
Well, Colonel Miller took part in the attack and carried out the normal and proper procedure. His battalion, of course, or part of it, had been overrun.
That was Jeffries.
Yes. He came back under instructions to brigade headquarters, advanced brigade headquarters at Ecury, and was directed to report back to brigade headquarters with the remnants of his battalion, because at that time Peter Jeffries, which was about half the battalion, had disappeared. He was on foot. He had no transport. He had been on the go for probably 3 or 4 days. He was very fatigued and very tired. His intelligence officer had been lost. His adjutant had been lost. His liaison officer had been lost.
So a lot of his staff, so to speak,
he was deprived of staff. He was deprived of staff. He was personally commanding. He would have probably a third of the battalion left.
Was fatigue, in your view, affecting his performance?
I should say fatigue was affecting all our performance.
So what happened then to them, as far as you know?
Well, they came back, and brigade headquarters, there was no record of them having reported in, but certainly we know that they managed to get past. They crossed the La Bassée Canal, and whilst they were on the canal, or just over the canal, they were subject to a very heavy bombing attack in the town, the result of which they would be overrun by civilians. And coordinating, and there were all sorts of units making their way back under direction to the coast. Well, we at that time knew nothing about the evacuation, but we heard later. And stragglers from his little subunit joined them and put themselves under command of those units. Colonel Miller himself, after the bombing, retraced and found the brigade headquarters and reported back to brigade headquarters. By which time Peter Jeffrey had returned, and we were back on the ridge, virtually in our original defence positions, prepared to dig in again.
So as far as you're concerned, there's no mystery or suspicion or anything wrong about the way Colonel Miller and some of the other officers of the 6th Battalion behaved?
There isn't any mystery. Bewilderment in war takes place all the time, and you are not often clear of where people have gone or what they've done. You may jump to some sorts of conclusions, but after when you've analysed all these things, you usually find there's a proper and correct explanation for their actions.
Were the people jumping to conclusions at brigade headquarters at the time?
Or? Oh, no. Nobody jumped to any conclusions. You must recollect that events move so fast. We were under constant air attack. We were receiving many orders. The concern was to maintain our troops and keep them together as a proper fighting force. We were yet to be told of a withdrawal or an evacuation at Dunkirk at that time. We were considering ourselves to be troops fighting in the line against a known position, a known condition. And therefore, we behaved in the normal manner.
Do you know why the rumours about Colonel Miller's performance at Arras began? Or do you have any ideas yourself what caused it? You know, the rumours? Because they do exist, as I'm sure you're aware.
I should say that the rumours of existing would be originated because those small units that joined the others after the bombing and put themselves under command of units that they found themselves with would themselves be so bewildered that they would say, oh, somebody left them or anything like that. I mean, you know how these rumours start. It's nothing tangible and nothing that you can say has any substance.
So what the withdrawal to Vimy Ridge, when exactly do you regard that having taken place?
The
German counterattack that evening of the 20th?
Well, we went into the attack. There was the German counterattack. There was the overrunning of the tanks. That was the night, I should say, that we withdrew during the day. It did even, when I say day, remember, day to us was at 3, it commenced at 3 in the morning. And all through that period of that time, we were retreating back to our positions.
That was on the 22nd?
Yes, they were retreating back onto the ridge, and we came back to our own positions.
What was your role in such a sudden withdrawal?
My role, of course, was to liaise with the... was to make certain that all the transport officers were functioning efficiently and all the machinery of checkpoints and collecting points and directing signposts and all this sort of thing were functioning so that when troops came along, they were whisked away or they were properly put back into their own positions so that the brigade checkpoint, as troops came up, they were redirected into their battle positions on the ridge.
And what were the battle positions?
In the defensive positions, roughly the same as they were, that you had the 60 LI on the left and the 8th on the right and the 9th just further along.
Do you recollect whether the 4th Royal Northumberland Fusiliers were attached to at this time?
Well, they were all brought back as soon as they came under fire at Arras, when they were acting as a reconnaissance screen, they came back through us. And then went back and joined their own parent unit. We had some French tanks come through us. And we had a party of French troops with me sometimes, which I directed for some time, from a unit called the Deuxième Brigade Motorisée. But they were with a pier and then suddenly disappeared in the night.
So these defensive... While you were establishing the positions on Vimy, the counterattacks had lapsed, had they?
Yes, the Germans resumed coming round the flank.
But you were still under air?
I was still under air attack.
What was the nature of the air attack? What form?
Well, these Stuka dive bombers.
Did the siren have any effect, or you were under it? Do you think it was a successful method to have a siren to try and unnerve you, or...?
No, the noise that they made themselves as they came down and the bombs came down, they made a terrific row. I think the bomb coming down made a bigger row than when it hit the ground. And everybody dug in and dug into their little slit trenches. And the only time I remember a boy's anti-tank rifle being effective was when Sergeant Philpott, who was then the brigade intelligence sergeant, had mounted a boy's anti-tank rifle on a wheel of a cart. And he fired at the Stuka as it came down and hit it on the nose very successfully.
So you were setting up position. What happened during the day then of the 22nd?
Well, during the day of the 22nd, everything was prepared for what we thought would be a major attack. But I could see from the ridge that the German columns seemed to be going more to the south and round towards the east than forming up for any assault onto us. And it was then during that night that something must have gone sour in the north. And we were immediately ordered back off from the Vimy Ridge position up to the Armonty areas and retraced the same sort of force mass conditions that we had coming down.
So could you explain a little more detail what actually happened, the evacuation of Vimy Ridge?
Well, at Vimy Ridge, I was off duty at that time and I was having a sleep in a ditch which was just probably a quarter mile down the road, and my batman was keeping watch, and he reported to me that there were signs of movement along the ridge, and there was what appeared to be an awful lot of refugees pouring through. I went back to my own brigade headquarters transport, and I collected them all together, got everybody into the vehicles, and got them ready, and watched all this movement as far as I could, trying to find out what it was. I did not receive any orders from Brigade. I received nothing from anybody.